For an even better way to listen to Football Weekly at home, at work or on the go, head to soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly or download the SoundCloud app for Android and iPhone.
Football Weekly Extra.
Today, figure of Dennis Bergkamp set to stand outside Emirates shortly. Figure of Benitez likewise at Stamford Bridge after Chelsea go to Borough for some cup action. Come away with anything but sugar. With Raf now on Borough time, the pod asks, is he, to quote his catchphrase, fact, and has he gone? In fact, by the time you hear this. Elsewhere, there's Real trashing the Nou Camp, Beckham Barton part deux, posts, tweets galore, and a big, big weekend in the Premier League. Spurs, Arsenal, and QPR's chances at Southampton, because if there's one thing Harry knows well, it's how to go for broke on the South Coast. All of that in today's Football Weekly Extra. Well, it looks like being a special pod yet again today. We've got Tom Lutz here. Hi, Tom.
Hello. Can I quickly say, my friend Andy Chapman in Australia has just had a lovely baby daughter called Caitlin. So can I say hello? Because I'm too tight to send a card.
Right, no, there's no possible way. I can't believe you're backing up the top headlines for that. But yeah, God bless and best wishes to them.
Birth of a child's more important than
isn't
football.
It, though? Doesn't that put everything into perspective?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe Rafa should think about that.
Well, maybe everyone should think about that. Owen Gibson.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. How nice to have you on board with so much Chelsea chitter and chatter to come.
Absolutely.
Mm. And Barry Glendening.
Hello.
You're about to jet off to Rome.
I am, yeah.
But not before we've talked about the FA Cup.
Yeah, and not because the Pope is about to jet out of Rome.
That's true.
I'm not taking
He's getting a helicopter, I think, isn't he?
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's getting... Right. Yeah. Okay, so Pope, baby, chat, tick. FA Cup, Barry. FA Cup. Well, the big story here, Everton getting their first win in 5 games, no?
Yeah, that's obviously the massive story.
Yep. What a shocker.
And congratulations to them.
Absolutely, they'll be playing Wigan.
There's a little bit of a David Moyes backlash starting,
yeah,
I think. And we possibly contributed to it on Monday. I got a little bit of grief over that. I don't want to disparage the man. I think he's a very good manager. I just think sometimes he's quite negative. But yeah, there does seem to be a bit of Moyes backlash. And
right, well, they're facing Wigan on the road to a possible semi-final. Of course, the heartache of that FA Cup disaster last year against Liverpool. Owen, though, there's another story out there, isn't there?
There is, I believe, yeah.
Is it the PA before the Borough-Chelsea game?
It is the PA before the Borough-Chelsea game, yeah, which played Fernando.
Money.
And what was the other one?
Money for Nothing.
That's the one, Money for Nothing. I did wonder if
the Borough DJ.
If the Hibernian PA announcer who was sacked for playing Taxman before the Hearts game got a new berth at the Riverside.
Okay, all right, well, Rafa Benitez then, because they won 2-0, Torres scoring off his shoulder.
Are you giving him that one?
Yeah.
Really?
They all count, Barry. I've seen them given, etc. And then Rafa took the stage for one of his kind of yearly... getting things off my chest.
It's described as a rant and a meltdown and so on, and it's not nothing of the sort, really. It was quite a measured, sort of reasoned, point-by-point kind of attempt to get off his chest, I suspect, everything that's been building up over the last few weeks. But but it was interesting. Apparently, he didn't make any of these points to ITV, to whom he gave the first post-match interview. But by the time he'd warmed himself up with Al Jazeera and then Radio 5 Live, and by the time he got to the written press, he'd said it all sort of 2 or 3 times. So I think it was all in his head, ready to go. But he'd obviously forgotten to tell ITV, which must have gone down well with Townsend and co.
Yeah. Sahil Siddat says, what was your favourite... part of the Benitez outburst. I have to say, outburst, I printed off the full transcript. It runs to 4 pages. I'm not sure that it's really worthy of kind of picking out highlights per se, because it wasn't that dramatic, would it? Or was it, Tom?
Well, at that length, and it's quite well articulated, it almost seems like he might have been pre-prepared, and he's got a history of these statements. I remember him calling Everton, a smaller club, coming to Anfield in February 2007 or something like that. I actually looked that date up. It's not like I got that off the top of my head.
Right, Tom.
I thought some of his points were fairly reasonable.
Right, so because some people are coming out very much saying, fans, they pay to go to games, you're paid to be there, you can't touch them.
But I think there's an element of people sort of criticising, and you get a bit of this in the media as well, people telling fans how to behave, and football is irrational and tribal and all the rest of it, you know, and to be fair to the Chelsea fans, it's not as if they have changed their mind on this. They were pretty clear from day one. They didn't particularly, you know, I think the blame has to lie with Chelsea hierarchy.
Right. And yet you can understand how Rafa is the only human, after all, after taking this kind of sustained campaign of abuse, might decide one day to go, you know what, I'm bigger than this.
You can understand why he said what he said. I think you can understand up to a point the fans' position. I think the thing that's difficult to understand is why the Chelsea, the sort of nebulous Chelsea hierarchy, gave him the job in the first place. And, you know, the fans are in this slightly strange paradox, aren't they, where they're furious at what's going on. They can't work out. Obviously, they're angry at Benitez. They're directing anger at Bruce Buck and the board and so on, but they don't feel they can be angry with Abramovich, who's the man who's put £1 billion into their club and taken them to the Champions League title. So, but the man who makes the decisions is Abramovich. So it's very, they find themselves conflicted.
Will he still be there by this weekend's game against West Brom?
Well, you asked me that. It's conceivable that he could be gone by the time this podcast goes up on the website.
I just spoke to Chelsea and they said it's business as usual, which probably means he will be gone by the time this podcast.
Well, yeah, very much so, because it's always West Brom, isn't it?
It's always West Brom. It's usually after West Brom, but yeah, it's West Brom always involved.
Andre Villas-Boas went there in March, almost exactly a year ago, in fact. And then Di Matteo as well.
Indeed, yeah.
I suspect that if Benitez was going to have been sacked, he might have been sacked last night being Wednesday night. But I don't know who'd come in. Avram Grant, perhaps, his name's been bandied about. While I'm not going to attempt to rationalise or get inside Abramovich's head, what has Benitez done that would merit his dismissal?
You made a bit of a face when Barry mentioned Avram Grant. To put it mildly, Owen, what would the Stamford Bridge... Would that be... careful what you wish for.
I just wonder how that would then go down. Yeah, yeah. I mean, not exactly pulled up many trees since his last stint at Stamford Bridge, has he?
But realistically, what options are there?
No, there are very few, aren't they? When your short-term fix is booted out, you know, before the end of his short-term tenure, it's very hard to see where you go from there.
Right. If you look at the points won per game by Chelsea managers under Abramovich, Benitez is actually worst of the entire collection. But the last three managers actually occupy the bottom three positions on that table. So it's almost as if things are just progressing. No matter how you get in, things are just going to get worse and worse.
Exactly, and he's no further forward than, you know, 10 managers go and Claudio Ranieri.
Indeed. Now, it's, of course, a precarious predicament that Chelsea currently find themselves in, having been swept past by Spurs on Monday night with that fabulous 3-2 win against West Ham. Spurs now in third place, Arsenal only 2 points behind Chelsea, who are now fighting for their very top four survival, and Arsenal taking on Spurs this weekend. What a huge match. Let's move on to that race for the top four. What a huge match that is. A lot of Bale love. A lot of Bale
Absolutely.
Love after
well,
the game.
You know, a huge outpouring of Bale love. But he's been extraordinary, though, hasn't he? I mean, kind of, you know, one-man team's going a bit far, particularly as Lloris was also... been playing very well, I think. But, you know, he's been extraordinary.
It was interesting to watch the game on Monday. I did the minute by minute. And it's interesting figuring out how good Spurs are, because you take away Bale, and I think they're kind of on that fifth or fourth place margin with him. They're kind of a definite Champions League club. And
but it's great when players just go through one of those phases, isn't it, where you know that every time they get the ball, that some, you know, he obviously believes he can score every time he shoots, doesn't he? You know, he's in one of those imperial and phases like Ronaldo was.
Yeah,
at United,
he doesn't even look
point.
He's very Jedi, he doesn't even look at the goal anymore. Exactly. He just carries on running the opposite direction but hoofs the ball in.
His two goals had nothing to do with his teammates either, like they really were from nothing. And I think
I would disagree with that.
All right then, Barry,
go on.
Respectfully. Well, no, disrespectfully. I just think there has been a lot of talk about Bale, you know, Spurs being a one-man team with Bale being that man, but floating brain in a jar, Jonathan Wilson wrote quite an interesting article saying that his teammates, he needs his teammates there because they bring out the best in him.
They provide the platform on which he can perform.
Yeah, and they give him the ball at every opportunity, so even if he's fallen over, they wait for him to get back to his feet and then prod it his way so he can score. So, yeah, I think it's a bit disingenuous to say that.
All right. Well, how about that, Tom? Did you know who Gareth Bale's favourite opponent is, who he scores the most goals against?
No.
Tony Arsenal.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
well, the
it
last
is.
Two games have been 5-2 in the league, haven't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, it's strange that, but yet he's scored more goals against Arsenal than against any other club. And you have to say, despite those two 5-2s to Arsenal,
on paper at least, Spurs look the heavy favourites here, do they not? Bale going up against a back line that may be missing, well, Gibbs out, possibly Sagna as well. Arsenal desperately weak against the break.
I mean, Carl Jenkinson against Bale, there's only one winner there. But, I mean, we kind of forget with Arsenal's woes in the FA Cup and Champions League that their league form's actually been pretty good. I think it might even be slightly better than Spurs over the last five.
Here's a crazy stat for you. Which team has got the best record in North London derbies this season?
Arsenal.
It is Arsenal, Tom, correct. Just ahead of Spurs, indeed, in London derbies on goal difference alone. But it's surprising, isn't it?
Yes, it is, yeah. And in true clichéd fashion, that race for fourth is probably becoming more interesting than the race for the championship, isn't it? Because it's going to be very tight.
Yeah, absolutely. It looks like Jermaine Defoe out, which means Adebayor get a chance to redeem himself after his spectacular misses at Upton Park.
Has he got a new girlfriend?
No, I was referring to Emmanuel's boobs.
He's not had a great season, has he? And you wouldn't be hugely confident of him making much of a difference in that game, but he does seem to like playing against Arsenal,
right?
And they bring the best out of him,
right? You've got your mind on the Eternal City, haven't you, Barry?
Yeah,
absolutely. Good for you.
I just, there's kind of a tenuous link between this game and the Chelsea Rafa thing. While fans are perfectly entitled to voice their displeasure with players or managers, as Chelsea fans have done with Benitez, I always get a little chuckle now when I watch Spurs playing. I thoroughly enjoy watching them play, and they're doing very well this season. I think it was after Andre Villas-Boas's second game, the AVB out campaign was started in earnest by a few Spurs fans who I would imagine have piped down considerably.
And certainly by October, it was in full effect, wasn't it? You know, you're right. There does seem to be I wonder if there's an element of modern football fans trying to make their voices heard a little bit though as well. Because, I mean, the grumblings at Arsenal have kind of erupted every other week, and, you know, kind of
And it's the managers always get it in the neck from the fans because they're the only visible target.
Well, exactly. And again, there's a read across the Chelsea situation whereby nobody from the hierarchy ever stands up and takes any of the flak.
Well, I think a couple of points to remember is that in this day and age, it tends to be the most moronic element that shouts the loudest and who are heard the most. So I would imagine knowledgeable Spurs fans were quite happy to give Andre Villas-Boas a chance. And, you know, this whole thing of Chelsea fans being against the appointment of Benitez because he made some mildly disparaging remarks about them several years ago. I mean, it's just pretty childish. Mm. But I think in the case of Chelsea, that a lot of fans are afraid to criticise Abramovich because they're afraid he'll pull the plug and leave.
Absolutely. It was very very interesting timing to see the Gareth Bale celebration on Monday night as he ran to embrace. The first person he ran to embrace was Andre Villas-Boas. This on the same day that the man who replaced Villas-Boas was getting chewed out by his players at Cobham.
And it's really notable at the Spurs, isn't it? The players all seem to speak very highly, even those that haven't been making the team. You know, kind of, he seems to have created a really good atmosphere there.
Indeed. All right, then. Just to finish off, then, North London derby. How do you feel about Bergkamp's statue outside the Emirates? Thumbs up?
Yeah.
How absolutely. Do you feel about Mario Balotelli's statue inside his new Brescia pad?
I would give that a more McCartney-esque thumbs aloft than I would the Bergkamp statue. If I had to choose between them, I would like to have a statue of Mario Balotelli in my own house.
Would you?
Yeah.
With jewels for eyes, like apparently his will have. Who would you? You wouldn't go for Cavani or anything like that?
No, I think I'd go Balotelli. I have this image in my head. It's going to be that pose of him after scoring for Italy.
Right.
Where, you know, and he just looks like he's been chiselled out of ebony. And,
well, in this case, he might be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tom.
I've already got a statue of myself in my house.
Have you? Yeah. In what pose?
An erotic one, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you use it to hang things on or what?
It's
not stones for eyes. Do you have eyes for stones?
Yeah. All that stuff, yeah.
Right. And then I have to ask you then.
I don't have any statues.
Do you not? I haven't got a statue either.
My house is big enough to have a statue.
Yeah, I can't have statues in my house because I just kick them over. how I roll. I have to say...
But you could just get a little garden gnome and remove its hat.
Yeah.
And that could kind of be you.
That's true, Barry, with a fishing rod.
Yeah. Life size.
Life size. Oh, bless. Have to say that the Balotelli story wasn't the most shocking thing I read this week.
All right.
What was the most shocking thing you read this week, Jimbo?
Well,
without doubt, it was the challenged individual who posted a fan fiction about me and Sid Lowe. Did you see this?
This sounds terrifying.
It's beyond terrifying. I don't know who you are, strange individual, but please stop.
Where can we find this?
Producer Ben's chortling. He's going to post a link to it. Yeah.
Is it erotic?
I couldn't read it. It was. I don't know what that says about me, but I found it very, very troubling.
It might open up something within you that you never knew there.
Yeah, that's been buried for a very good reason. Well, of course, Wednesday night saw the big cup clash in Ligue 1, Paris Saint-Germain, Olympique Marseille. They'd just met at the weekend. It was 2-0 to Paris Saint-Germain. This time, though, David Beckham getting his start. Barry, I've got a French newspaper here. That's the headline. Ibra gives OM1 in the nose. I think that might be a reference because I think he scored both goals, didn't he? It was an exclusive live feed on the Guardian's website, wasn't it? And I think this headline might refer to the fact that there were some crunching tackles involving Joey Barton, and Ibra put one on Joey, after which Joey was most disgruntled and made a gesture indicating that Ibra had a big nose.
It's childish.
It is a bit childish, but quite fun to watch.
But he has got a very big nose.
Well, the pair of them stared each other out, and I did feel... I'm not usually a pugilism fan, but I would pay money to see them at it.
Is he black belt in
taekwondo? Supposedly so, yeah. But Barton, I feel, would bring some street skills, maybe a cigar or two, to the party. And stick the two of them in a cage, for me, that would be an event UFC, I would pay to watch. Yeah. Do you not think?
Do you think Barton would...
He'd use
give
weapons.
Ibra a run
I
for
do,
his money
actually.
In a fight.
He's just so nasty.
He's been in stir doesn't mean he's handy.
Sure it does, Barry.
No, he could have been one of those
Tim Robbins
guys who got picked on by the sisters or,
right.
You know, sort of kept himself to himself out in the exercise yard.
Right.
While other people were walking around shanking each other.
Okay. Have you read that fan fiction?
No.
Oh, all right. Sorry. I thought you were.
It's a shanking.
Okay. Oh, right. Right. Well, anyway, there you go. Well done, Ibra. And David Beckham ran the show, says top French journal L'Equipe. Fantastic. That's all we need to know about that. Beckham's comeback. What?
Getting slightly weary of this Beckham
mania.
Mania. It's just thoroughly depressing.
Really?
Well, no English paper is in the slightest bit interested in Ligue 1 usually, but as soon as some fading superstar goes to ply his trade there, and I don't mean Joey Barton, suddenly they're all sending correspondents, including The Guardian, all sending correspondents to cover the PSG matches. I know there is a certain amount of public interest in it, but I don't think it's as high as the media would have us believe.
Someone did point out on Twitter last night, they wondered if we'd have the same interest in the media if he'd gone to Angie rather than... Paris, you know, kind of Milan,
Mashkashkala,
indeed,
right.
LA, Milan, Paris has certain a greater pull, perhaps. For,
right.
For correspondence.
That sounds the whole media overreaction of Beckham in Paris sounds like a perfect topic for me to explore in Friday morning's paper review.
Do that.
All right then. Of course, Paris Saint-Germain go through to the quarterfinals of the French Cup, and of course, unless it's got Beckham in, we don't care. So we'll move on to the big game Friday night in Italy. It's only Napoli-Juventus. Tom, as you know, Napoli are currently 6 points behind Juventus, so this is seen very much as the last chance for them to reopen the title race. A win against Juve at the San Paolo, Juve do have a good record against the partner pair, would bring it back to 3 points, maths fans suggest. And
Do you think that's likely?
Do you know, I think that Juve have a little bit got their mojo back. Chiellini might be returning to the side, although apparently his ankle's still swollen. That would have a big impact. They do have Celtic, the return leg of that coming up next week. But Napoli not going through the greatest period. They haven't won in five in all competitions. That's largely because Cavani's dried up.
He's a husk.
Yeah.
Does that coincide with the latest bout of speculation about where he'll be next?
Well, there's always been speculation about his future, and he's just continued to bang in the goals. I think it's 500 minutes since he scored. So, you know, we're hardly in a Torres
scenario.
Torres is only about 10 minutes.
Exactly. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
I still don't think you should be giving him that one.
Oh, Barry. Right.
And the thing about it was he looked so delighted to have scored it as well. That's the saddest thing.
Poor chap.
Wasn't he trying to get out of the way?
I think he was.
He
can't even get out of the way properly anymore. And I like Fernando. I'd like to give him that goal, but I just think it would be unjust.
Okay. Who do you want to give it to?
Pardon?
I said, who do you want to give it to? The goal.
Oh, I'll take it.
Okay, very good.
I've as much right to it as Fernando Torres, I think.
Right. Let's see if we can dial up Sid Lowe now to hear about the other big midweek cup action, and that was in Spain.
Hello, Jimbo. How you doing?
All right, Sid. I'm doing very well. I must say, I love your accent, Sid.
Pardon?
I love your accent.
Right.
Yep. Were you in a gay bar the other day?
Pardon? I don't think I've been in a gay bar recently, no.
All right, then.
There used to be this brilliant gay disco next to my favourite restaurant in Madrid, and they had, funnily enough, they had a kind of secret back door to it, and very bizarre, but anyway, there you go.
Right. Okay, now somewhere out there, there's somebody sweating really, really badly, because we're basically reenacting his extraordinary, or his or hers, their extraordinary, bit of fan fiction, which slithered out from under a rock onto the internet this week. Sid, have you not read it?
I'm sorry, I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
All right, you and me in a bit of fan fiction. Do you know what that is?
Saucy
stuff.
I assume
Sid,
it's some sort of parody, is it? Is that what you mean?
No. Best you read it.
Okay, you frightened me now.
Yes.
I would suggest, Sid, it's probably best you don't read it.
Okay, all right.
Fan fiction is this whole kind of subgenre whereby you take incredibly famous and beloved public figures.
What, like you mean?
Like you and me, Sid.
Oh,
and
blimey.
You put them very much together.
Oh, Christ, I'm...
producer Ben,
so is this 50 Shades of Pod Grey?
Yeah, it very much is.
Oh, Christ.
Producer Ben wants me to read out a little bit, but I have to say...
Oh, please do. Did you breathe heavily as you undid my shirt?
No, we don't get that far.
Okay, well, that's no good then.
You'll get sick in your mouth, can I warn you?
Christ.
Oh, actually, I'm reading out Rafa's Tirade. That's a different thing altogether. Where is it? Over here. Right, okay. It's just this kind of really awkward conversation where I keep mentioning gay bars and telling you I like your accent. And then...
Right.
Yeah.
But why would you ever... I mean, even in a piece of fan lit, tell me you like my accent.
His phone began to buzz again, and when he glanced down at the phone, he saw Sid's name light up the screen. The call was completely unexpected, and he swallowed hard before he hit the reject button. He didn't have to hear Sid's voice
Hang on,
hang on,
I thought you said it didn't go that far.
Right, yeah. He didn't have to hear Sid's voice to know he was going to be let down with some degree of gentleness. He'd rather hold on to the dream just that little bit longer. Maybe when the football's over, this is your text to me, we could get together and you could tell me exactly how much you like my accent. I reply, I'm not sure you'd appreciate it. Invariably in that sort of scenario, I happen, and then it turns into a disaster.
I'll tell you, Jim, but there is only one word I can come up with for that.
Right.
And that is woof, and very much woof.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I presume that's only the first chapter.
Presumably we have to reach some sort of, pardon my English, gripping climax.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's just left out there, you know? Maybe it is. Now, Sid, in other news this week, they had a Classico. Boy, did they have a Classico.
It was Madrid pretty much all the way through. I mean, I think it was, you know, the part that you have this kind of product of the second leg, having played the second leg, at home, if the other team gets your away goal and it dies there and then. And it felt to me like Barcelona were gone as soon as Madrid scored. But Madrid played really, really well. In the sense that they controlled Barcelona, they prevented Barcelona really having pretty much any chances after the first 10 or 15 minutes. They always looked dangerous every time they braked, and Barcelona looked like a team in a bit of trouble at the moment.
Well, this has been taken, I understand, in Spain as very much a shift in the landscape of Spanish football.
Yeah, it has, which in a way is slightly strange, but I also understand it. I mean, bear in mind that the Clásicos have a habit of kind of imposing upon us really huge, sweeping statements about how everything's changed, because it feels as well like you're never allowed to think, well, maybe we're in a period where they're both quite good and they'll both beat each other occasionally, and so it's always kind of presented almost as epoch defining, and this one certainly has, which is a bit strange in a way, given that Real Madrid already won the league off Barcelona last year and really quite well, breaking a points total. So in a way, you could say, well, maybe the shift really was there. It's also strange in the sense that Barcelona are 16 points clear. But I think what's really changed isn't just the fact that Real Madrid won this. It's the fact that for the first time, I think, in a long time, we've now seen a couple of big games in a row, AC Milan and now Real Madrid, in which Barcelona haven't just been beaten, but they been deserved to be beaten. I mean, it's a very long time, I think, that you have to go back to find a game where basically Barcelona were outright second best pretty much all the way through. Because even when they've been defeated over the last 4 or 5 years, you could always make a case for them. And I think in these last two games, you probably can't.
Right, interesting. Well, what's also interesting is that they've got another game this Saturday with Real, but all the talk post the Copa del Rey semi was the fact that, yeah, we're going to bounce back, but against Milan next week.
Yeah, of course, because I think deep down everybody knows that this Saturday doesn't really matter. I mean, it matters in terms of, you know, there's a certain degree of pride involved in it, and I think there's an emotional importance in terms of how it may set the two clubs up for their Champions League games. But, of course, with a 16-point lead in La Liga, with Mourinho having already conceded defeat in La Liga, I think both sides know it doesn't matter. I think it might matter more if it wasn't for the fact that Champions League games are coming up, but they now see it entirely in those terms. And I have a slight doubt now. I almost wonder if Mourinho will be thinking a league game that perhaps he didn't think mattered before almost matters a little bit more now. I wonder if he feels he can really twist the knife with Barcelona in this league game. I think what we might get is the most irrelevant Clásico for a very long time.
All right, I just thought that maybe having been humiliated in their own ground, that Barca would particularly want to get, even if it was a meaningless win, a very big meaningless win.
And this is what I mean. So it's important in terms of perhaps its emotional ability to condition what comes next, and to condition the mindset of the two teams. But the game itself doesn't matter. I wonder about it if it's in both teams' interests almost to play weakened sides, because that way, no matter what happens, either for good or for bad, you can come out of it feeling reinforced. Because let's say, for argument's sake, you play a youth team and you still win. You go, wow, this is brilliant, even with a youth team. You play a youth team and you lose and say, well, it didn't matter. And you kind of protect yourself from any potentially damaging outcome. From Real Madrid's point of view, of course, that's far more important, because they play United 3 days later and Barcelona, I think, have 10 days before, or nine before they play Milan.
Sid, it's Tom here. Just had a quick question. Atletico obviously won the other semi, so it's going to be an all-Madrid final. Is that likely to be played in Madrid? Because I heard a few Real fans wanted it to be played in
Barcelona,
because, you know, it's kind of socking it home to the opposition and winning the cup in their ground.
I'm so glad you've asked this question, because this, for me, is another example of what a complete and utter joke Spanish football is at an organisational level. The Copa del Rey final, we still don't know where it's going to be. I mean, that you can more or less understand that, because maybe it makes some sense to wait to see who the two finalists are and decide from there. I don't know if you remember, but last year there was a huge furore about the final because Real Madrid refused to allow Athletic Bilbao and Barcelona to play in their stadium, which is a real pity, purely in terms of the number of fans that could have gone to see it. Madrid have leaked last night that they will ask formally for it to be in the Camp Nou, which seems to me to be completely nonsensical, because while you can get in an extra 20,000 fans, you're forcing every single fan for that final to travel, 600 kilometres to Barcelona orbit. There's a fast train these days. So I don't really see the advantage from that point of view. When Atletico Madrid and Real Madrid have played in Copa del Rey finals before, they've always played at the Bernabeu or at the Calderon. The last one was at the Bernabeu and Atletico won it. The only time they've played one in the Calderon, Real Madrid won it. Atletico Madrid's president last night said he wants it at the Calderon, but that he wouldn't mind playing at the Bernabeu, because of course there's a bigger attendance, but it hasn't yet been decided. More importantly, the reason why I say this is a joke is because we're back in the same routine we always have with the Copa del Rey final. We don't know when the final will be. It was penciled in for the 18th of May, but you know what? We can't have it on the 18th of May. Do you know why not, Jimbo?
No.
Because it clashes with the Eurovision Song Contest.
Quite right, Sid.
What's your favourite Eurovision song, Owen?
Oh, blimey.
Was that one? Probably was, you
probably
know.
Oh, blimey. That one in 1983, I think, isn't it?
There is a nice Spanish Eurovision story as well, of course, Jimbo.
Go on.
I think it's 1966, but I might have the year wrong. It could be 68, but it's around about that time.
Uh-huh.
Spain were due to have an entry. Crikey, who was it again? I think it was Serrat who was going to sing it, and he was banned from singing it in Catalan, so Maciel sang it instead. So the song that was going to be called La 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 in Catalan was played in Spanish instead, and it was called La 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 in Spanish. And it won, beating Cliff Richard into second place.
Really?
And it turned out many years later that Franco had rigged it.
Really? Sir Cliff? Another victim of General Franco?
Who'd have thought it? It's the most tragic victim of all as well.
Wow. Which Cliff song narrowly?
I think it was Congratulations.
Was it Congratulations?
I'm not certain, or did he win it with
no,
that?
I think he won it with Congratulations.
Okay,
there were so many. Sid, I've got two more questions. You won. Rafa Benitez, what's the reaction been in Spain to that? Are people, you know, preparing his return?
By the way, I'm going into a tunnel, so I hope I don't lose you.
Well.
We talked about it a bit last night, actually, on the radio here, and just that sense of Benitez having been forced into a position where he blurted out he had the occasional tendency to do it in Spain, perhaps not quite as openly as that. For what it's worth, I think most of what Rafa Benitez said was quite right.
Yeah. All right, second question. This one comes from The Boz Boz. Says, Sky's highlight coverage of Spanish football invariably includes a bit of traditional Spanish music playing in the background. Do the English highlights in Spain have anything similar? And if so, do they play traditional English country dancing music, or the Beatles, or prog rock?
I love this question. I really hope I get to answer it before I lose reception.
Where are you going?
When I was covering, when I was part of the team that did the Sunday Roundup show on Spanish TV last year, we always trailed into the English football with the Sex Pistols version of God Save the Queen.
Terrific.
I thought it was brilliant. And then on the Saturday night rap was always with Robbie Williams' Let Me Entertain You.
All right.
Which is perhaps a lot less cool.
Right.
Well, perhaps less cool. Very definitely less cool.
All right. Cool.
When Sid
said... it was God Save the Queen, and we cut off just before they mentioned a fascist regime, which is a real pity.
Yeah.
But I was always on set mouthing it as it came back.
No, I was just going to say that when Sid said, I'm going into a tunnel, I hope I don't lose you, that sounded like a line from fan fiction.
And as the reception cut, a tear rolled gently down Jimbo's cheek.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're misreading it. It was a tear, and it wasn't that cheek.
Your face literally popped open and revealed a piece of your skull underneath.
That's exactly what I was talking about, Sid. Nice one. Good. Catching up with you on Monday after your tunnel journey, Sid.
Okay, next time I get on a train, I very much expect to see you running along the platform with a little white hanky.
Right, okay. Very good. I'm sure it'll come in handy. Anyway. Breaking news ahead of Chelsea's visit to West Brom. Barry, Ben Foster says he's thinking of coming back out of his international retirement. How about that?
That's sensational.
That is. It'd be good to see him back in the England fold, wouldn't it?
Well, he might have a very good chance of getting a game if he's back in the England fold. I wonder if that's why he's said he's thinking of coming out of retirement.
Makes sense, doesn't it? Let's have a couple of posts, and then let's have a look at other big games from a big weekend. Did the pod see that tackle on Ronaldinho? Is it the worst ever? And if not, what is? Asked Adam Gray. Did you see it?
I did see the tackle. It was pretty bad. But worst not ever? No, Roy Keane.
Roy Keane.
It's got to be, isn't it?
End of. Right, okay. Evan G. On Kai Kamara. Apparently it's Kai, not Kay. On Kai Kamara. We talked about him on Monday.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, the pod might remember an incredible miss he had in 2010. He went up to kick a ball, which was already heading over the line towards an open goal. Basically, someone had already scored from range, and he ran in and tried to just basically give it the final tap in, but actually swung his leg to kick it on a bounce, slipped and fell on his backside and knocked the ball over the line with his hand instead. What was a sure goal was thus waved off because of his handball. That was a classic YouTube incident, actually. Nice one. Thank you, Evan G, for reminding us of that. A lot of people posting in on the whole most favourite, least favourite player paradigm. Is there something that interests you, Tom? Shall I read through the names I mean, it's all there's a lot of Zabaleta love. Yeah. Mata, Kabbalah, yeah. Scholes, a lot of people like him. Pirlo and Zlatan. Noni Ney says, I love Zlatan for being a massive dick and kind of getting away with it. A least favourite, says Noni Ney, is Scott Parker. What he stands for scares me. He's the personification of all the scary bits of communism. I actually had a nightmare about a world populated only by Scott Parkers, a world with no thoughts or ideas or conversations or fun, a world where everything isn't bad. He goes on like this for some time. And millions of identical men with 12-year-old boys' hairstyles.
I don't understand what he means.
Well, I think he just thinks that he's the personification of the worker ant or something, I think. Mm. For Noni Ney.
Scott Parker, he always reminds me, it's like he should have been in the Memphis Belle or something. He's got World War II haircut.
Haircut, isn't he? Yeah.
Not as much as Alberto Riera, formerly of Liverpool. He had a very much 1940s haircut. I like a 1940s haircut.
Nothing wrong with it.
Nothing wrong with it at all. I like a haircut.
For any haircut.
Badum. And indeed, Tish. A lot of least favourite nods for Pepe, which might well win the argument. Nasri's in there as well. Somebody naturally mentioned Joey Barton. That's just, you know, that's just easy, isn't it? Hey, Guarachero says, favourite player, Bergkamp, most hated, obviously Joey Barton. Ooh, 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 ooh. Can we do a most hated manager? But then he goes on to list every single manager. And he says, oh, hang on, the only ones that I like are Gus Poyet, Houghton and Zola. Come on, Ancelotti.
Ancelotti. The only man who made Chelsea likeable, isn't
yeah. it? Now... That was all fun, wasn't it? Rest of the weekend I've got here, because we talked about a couple of games earlier, Tom, if you remember. There was that Spurs-Arsenal thing and also West Brom-Chelsea. How about, though, are those games, big as they are they perhaps eclipsed by the humongous clash that's going to happen at St Mary's as Southampton take on QPR.
Talking of hated managers, Harry Redknapp's back. Welcoming arms of Southampton fans.
Back
at another club that he took down.
Interesting. Saints, of course, had a win already at Loftus Road in the big clash of the bottom two. When was that? Back in November or something. 3-1. But this is very much where QPR target their revival starting. And as Gary Neville, in another of his, you know, very apposite bits of punditry, was pointing out, when you look at their run-in, their next eight games, with the exception of Everton, all against, they're exactly the next eight teams you would want to play if you wanted to pick up some points and pronto.
You would say that, but the way they're playing, you can't see them necessarily doing it. I mean, kind of the you're right. I mean, the fixture list is kinder to them than their relegation rivals.
Southampton, Sunderland, Aston Villa, Fulham, Wigan, Everton (in brackets), Stoke, and Reading.
But they're playing a lot of the teams around them as well, which isn't always easy.
Well, it's not, but those are exactly
you want to win to. Yeah, six pointers, they say.
This is why this one's important. It sets the tone for that run in.
What kind of tone do you think it's going to set?
I think it's going to set a bad tone.
Really?
Because I think they'll lose.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Southampton have been, well, their home form's improved massively this year. And even the defeat against Newcastle, I thought they played pretty well.
They were unlucky, weren't they, with that fox handball call. Madness.
Yeah, and one thing that, I mean, Southampton do score, I mean, both sides, QPR and Southampton, their defences are suspect, but at least Southampton, you're guaranteed a goal or two, whereas QPR, it's not happening.
Yeah, I don't think any fixture involving QPR is that interesting anymore, because I just think they're doomed. They're hopeless. They're, like, really... It's not like they're playing well and not getting points that they deserve. They're playing really, really badly and don't deserve to be winning any points. So, like that list of fixtures you read out there, I can't really see them winning any of those.
Really? Not to win any of them, says Barry.
No, and I said previously in a pod, and I just don't think Harry Redknapp is at QPR to keep them up. I don't think that's his main priority.
What's he there to do?
Make as much money as possible for Harry.
Right, okay. Well, the players seem to have a similar... They seem to have unity of intent in that.
Exactly. They're all on the same page.
Yeah. Right. Okay, good.
It's win-win for Redknapp, really. If they go down, he can leave and go, well, they never had a hope anyway. Look at the rabble I took over, and we only had X number of points, so what was I supposed to do? At which case, he'll forget all the rhetoric, confident rhetoric he's been spouting in recent weeks about how they can still stay up and all that. I don't think there's a hope of staying up.
Was it 7 points now?
There's 7 points between them and Villa, who are third, or them and Villa Wigan, who are third from bottom. But then,
Well, Wigan taking on Liverpool this weekend. Villa are up against Man City, so were QPR to win there, that you could realistically see that coming down to 4 points pretty quickly. Reading, meanwhile, are going to be at Everton. Reading actually beat Everton at the Medici Stadium earlier on this season. Hard to see that happening again, perhaps, Owen.
I think so, yeah. Mm. Although, you know, Wigan are coming good again, aren't they? They're doing what they tend to do around this time of year.
Yeah, they're the Arsenal of the bottom three.
Yeah.
As Paul McInnes was saying only on Monday.
They concede a lot of goals at home, though. They've conceded two or more in seven of their last eight at home in the league.
Right.
So it's difficult to imagine them getting a result against Liverpool.
Are Sunderland out of trouble, Barry? They're 5 points clear of the drop at the moment, and they are hosting Fulham.
I think they are out of trouble, not through anything marvellous they've done themselves, just that there are several teams worse than them in the Premier League. Their match against Fulham is not really one to get the blood racing, is it? It's difficult. I'd say both teams would settle for a draw.
All right. Okay. Speaking of draws and Fulham, did you see Berbatov's incredible sketches this week?
No.
Well, he's quite the caricaturist, actually. This was in one of the Red Tops, one of the tabloids this week. He basically says if he sees something he likes on the internet or telly, he just sketches it. And you can probably find this online. He did do Marlon Brando particularly effectively. His Bruce Willis owed rather too much to Brad Friedel, for my liking. But, you know, the guy has clearly got as skilled a hand as he does a foot, or 2 feet, in fact. Swansea are taking on Newcastle, etc. and so on. And well, how about, should we finish off just by having a little word on Man United Norwich? And of course, Robin van Persie is out for this one because he fell over a cameraman and injured, was it his kidney or something? You know those little dugouts where they have the cameras behind the goal? He kind of tripped backwards over. That's why he had to come off in the game against whoever was there playing the other day.
It wasn't the Guardian's Tom Jenkins, was it?
I hope not.
A photographer or a cameraman?
No, I think it was an actual telecamera.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah, so he won't be there.
Tom Jenkins would be very upset if he was responsible for injuring Robin van Persie. I think he's quite a sensitive soul.
Right, okay. Well, let's hope not. And, well, there you go. The Norwich beat. We talked about this a little bit on Monday. Norwich beat Man United earlier in the season at Carrow Road with van Persie out. We're looking at a bit of a shocker. Maybe a chink of light through what had seemed a closed door of the title race.
Unlikely,
all right,
I suspect.
All right. Oh, let's just finish off with some breaking news. Parisa Ben tells me there is a managerial departure. After all, John McGlynn leaving Heart of Midlothian. How about that? We'll have to go back and do the show again now. That is big news. All right, on that bombshell...
Well, Hearts are run in a similar fashion to Chelsea, aren't they? By a sort of megalomaniac multi-millionaire.
Is he still in charge or had he not walked away?
I think he may have walked away.
I think he walked away, leaving a shoddy, shabby husk of a club behind in a way.
A cautionary tale, yeah, perhaps, for yeah. some Chelsea fans who should be careful what they wish for.
What was his name? Romanov?
That's right. Yeah.
Vladimir Romanov.
Yeah. Lithuanian, you know. Rum.
Does that not mean son of Roman as well?
Might be. Yeah. Crikey, I tell you what. Do, 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 do. And all that. Very good. Now we're rambling, so let's put this one to bed. Say, buon viaggio, Barry. In the Eternal City. You'll be on a scooter this weekend, tooting about, popping your way across...
Working my way through that list of things to see and do you've given me.
All right. And Tom, you got anything special planned for the weekend? Any weekend?
I'm going to Sri Lanka in a few weeks.
No way.
That'll be good, won't it?
That certainly will.
I'm going to spend the weekend trying to erase the memory of that fan fiction.
Right. Embrace it, Owen. Embrace it. All right. And that's great. We'll be back on Monday. There will be a paper review up on Friday. So have a super time with whatever you're doing in the next few days. And look forward to speaking to you on Monday.
And don't forget to check out Jimbo's paper review. There's a brand new one up every Friday at guardian.co.uk/football. Worth.